Absolutely. I will tell you that I've been pretty consistent on historic tax credits, but when it comes to low-income housing tax credits, our constituency that we represent is in high need of housing. If you look at some of the transient numbers that we have, it is because of there's insecure housing for many people who are living in high poverty areas. Another thing that we are realizing, especially as a school board member, is that many of these families that we see who are coming into our families, not from the transfer program, but because of just the transient population and the mobility of these families, we're finding that they're living three families in a household. And it is because there's insecure housing. So while I want to decrease the amount of money that we spend on historic tax credits, I have always been a firm believer in the need to have access to low-income housing just to provide stability for high poverty families. It gives them the ability to just start new and establish themselves. And housing is a big deal.
Yeah, and it kind of crystallized when I was talking with some people. Like, I talked with Stephen Acree in St. Louis and Chris Kraemeyer of Beyond Housing that, yeah, historics are, aesthetically pleasing, but they're not really a need. You don't necessarily need an office building built or something like that. But it seems like when you're talking about low-income housing,
It's a completely different
it's
thing.
like there's a constant need for this, and even the amount that's doled out now is really not enough to meet the
It's
demand.
not. And so let me just tell you, everyone goes back to 2008 when our market crashed. And if you look at minority populations, in order for them to get back to where they were previous to 2008, it takes a longer time. So while some families in suburban areas are recovering much quicker, at a quicker rate, families that live in high urban areas, or in urban areas, high poverty areas, it's taking a longer time to recover. And because families are doubling up and tripling up in many cases, we're trying to find avenues where we can help families start all over again. And part of that is to have a low-income tax program that gives families a second chance.
So were you among now when the governor delayed some of those programs, including one, I believe in your district, the Pine Lawn one that behind Beyond Housing is doing. Were you among, people within the Black Caucus who were upset by that move?
Absolutely. Well, one of the issues is we are Democrats and we want to be able to support the governor. And he was dealing with a bill, Boeing at the time, to bring more jobs here. And Boeing, by the way, is also in my
Yes,
district.
exactly.
But we felt as though the governor at that point in time went behind our backs. We're trying to support the governor in every area that we can possibly do that and just agree to disagree in other small areas. But when we found out that there was a closed door behind the scene deal between Republicans and the governor, all of us were distraught, especially when it comes to low-income tax credits. There is not one person in the Black Caucus that I know of who was happy with the deal the governor made with the Republicans, not one.
So I guess MHDC is meeting again next week, and the Boeing deal is no more, obviously. So
Well, MHDC is also cutting domestic violence grant funds. And so, as a staffer to one of the former statewide office holders, I was responsible for looking at how MHDC funds different programs. And I can tell you when I don't know where I read it, but somewhere I've read that they are cutting funds for domestic violence grants. I was pretty disturbed there as well.
So somebody, I'm glad you mentioned that, because as somebody who used to work for a lieutenant governor, I'm sure that you're well familiar with how MHDC works and
Absolutely.
how low-income housing works, and
Absolutely.
maybe the politics and the controversy around it. And what a lot of critics of it are saying are, this beyond just the criticism of the program, that the reason why nothing's changed is just powerful developers and powerful syndicators and whatnot. Do you think, A, there's a level of truth to that, but B, whether their power or influence is being overstated in many respects.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And so let me tell you, there's only one developer that I know who lives in University City, and we were actually friends beforehand. But when the historic tax credit conversation started, I guess, last year, and I've wanted to limit them for a while, was the first time that I've had developers come to me and have a conversation about the program in all the years that I've been elected.
That was just historics, or was that low income too?
That was historics.
Okay, okay.
For the first time ever.
Yeah.
In fact, what we did is go through, I keep a list of all of my, emails, and I had my staff look up historic tax credits or historic in my, emails, because I never erased them. There were only six references to historic tax credits, and none of them, not one of the six, were relating to, we need to preserve, this is how historic tax credits work. And my philosophy is, you know, 15 years ago, there was an absolute need to preserve some amazing buildings. I mean, I was on the staff of the lieutenant governor when we were talking about rehabbing the old post office downtown. Before it was rehabbed, I was the staffer who was suggesting and writing my briefing to the lieutenant governor saying this is something that we need to do. So on one side, you know, I think some developers just felt as though it wasn't necessary to have a conversation with a state rep at the time from University City.
That might have been short-sighted.
You know, completely. So, and my comment last year is, you waited 9 years to educate me on this. You waited 9 years.
Yeah.
I've always been here.
Yeah.
And so, and even with the lieutenant governor, which at that point would make me in this building 13 years. But I do think that many of the developers have a lot of control over what happens, and it's unfortunate. But, you know, 15 years ago, getting back to my point, there was a need for historic tax credits, and it did promote development. But you know what? We're in a different day and age, and we need to start. I'm not saying eliminate the historic tax credit, tax credits. I would like to start investing in angel tax credits and different tax credits that put people in my district to work. I mean, a lot of the historic tax credits don't put my isolated constituency to work. They'd have to take like five buses to even get to a downtown site.
Do you see that same level of influence, though, in the low-income housing debate, or is it not as much?
No, I don't see that as well. I just see the need. You know, I do my ride-alongs at night with police officers, and all you have to do is look at some of these areas north in the first precinct, first district for St. Louis County, and there's obviously a need to have low-income housing tax credits for people who've been displaced. I mean, seriously, when you look at some of these neighborhoods, there needs to be reinvestment because they're deteriorating. And, oh, by the way, you know, many of these areas, Castle Point is one. It's also the River for You School District. You know, and so when you look at, you know, an education system that's failing, there's a high correlation with the fact that there's not any reinvestment and there's a lack of housing.
So, final two questions. If a tax credit bill comes down the pike, it's probably going to cut historics down to 90, which I guess you're amenable to.
I'd like to go to 70,
But it's going to cut low income down to 110, probably. Would that be something that would make you think twice about voting for that bill? Because what, you know, people like Chris Kramer and Stephen Acree are saying is, if you lower the cap, the math just means that there's going to be less units produced every year.
Well, here's what I would be looking at, and I haven't looked at the legislation that you're referring to, and I do want to negotiate. I do not see us limiting low-income tax credits without dealing with historic tax credits. That's a dead deal. That's you know, DOA, as far as I'm concerned, because from the very beginning, and I've communicated with the governor already that if we do not attack historic tax credits, I can't be down with anything else. Now, I do have to balance that philosophy that I have with what the needs are of my district. I'm just not going to say one thing right now and go back home and my constituents are saying something else. But I do know, because I travel around the district often and in North County in many different capacities, and I see there's a need for low-income tax credits just because these families, and as a school board member, mm-hmm. I see these families doubling up and tripling up because there's a lack of housing. Mm-hmm. There is a lack of housing.
Yeah. And my last question, it just seems like this debate has gone on forever. It's kind of in a circular, treadmillish type way. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's going to just continue to just be talk, or do you think there's actual action that's coming this year on both historic and low income?
I will tell you that I think there's more promise for a transfer bill than to get to a place where we're all in agreement, at least the majority of us in the Senate, when it comes to tax credits. I do think with a change of folks in the Senate, mm-hmm. next year we'll have a greater opportunity to have some reform.